Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Championship Rounds, a brand new podcast covering the biggest show in MMA, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I'm Simon Head, UFC editor for BT Sport, and along with my fellow MMA writer Ralph Welch, we'll break down the big fights and offer our predictions ahead of each big UFC event. The format's one that'll be familiar to anyone who's watched the UFC before. 5 5-minute rounds with a judge's verdict to finish. For our third show, we'll take a look at the upcoming UFC Fight Night doubleheader this weekend and pick the winners in four of the big matchups in Macau and in Tulsa. We've picked two fights from each card and we'll break each one down, picking a fighter each as we take a look at each matchup and offer our big fight predictions for this packed UFC Fight Night weekend. Well, we've got nothing more to wait for, so let's get this thing started. In our opening round this week, we break down the main event at UFC Fight Night Macau, as Britain's Michael Bisping looks to continue his resurgence up the UFC middleweight ladder with victory over the former Strikeforce middleweight champion, Kung Lee.
When you talk about Kung Lee, Simon, you're talking about a real storied veteran of the MMA scene. It says something about his fame and his notoriety that even at the grand old age of 42, he's the man the UFC chose to lead them into that potentially lucrative Chinese market. For those who don't know too much about Kung Lee, he's got an extraordinary story. He and his mother fled Saigon, they made it to California, racism forced the young man to learn martial arts as a means of self-defence, and from there he blossomed into one of the best professional kickboxers we've ever seen. Think Jean-Claude Van Damme, minus a lot of syllables. When he did make it into a cage, equally impressive, and he had that legendary rivalry with Frank Shamrock in the now defunct Strikeforce promotion. Now, understandably, after nearly two decades as a prize fighter, he's looking at a future beyond combat sports, and good luck to him. In recent times, his focus has shifted to the silver screen, where he's become something of an action hero. In fact, if you peruse the straight-to-DVD action rentals, probably right next to Stone Cold Steve Austin's latest venture, chances are you'll find something starring Kung Lee holding a machine gun and roundhouse kicking some Hong Kong gangsters into the middle of next week. But has he got any ammunition left in his MMA career? I mentioned how powerful his name value is to the UFC in China. He's the coaching mentor in the inaugural series of The Ultimate Fighter in the Far East, but we've not seen him in the octagon since he beat Rich Franklin back in November 2012, nearly 2 years ago. At his age, that's a long and potentially very dangerous period of inactivity, especially for a kickboxer by trade, whose speed and reflexes are absolutely vital to success. At 42, he's battling and losing the battle with old Father Time, who's got an unblemished record in the fight game. This is the right fight at the right time for Michael Bisping. He's a proud man. He's been the leader of the UK locker room in the UFC for many years, as you've said. If he can't beat Kung Lee, he'll face a barrage of questions about his future. But I think he will. I think he can do it at range, I think he can get in the clinch, and I think if he can get Kung Lee to the floor, he can beat him there as well. I expect Michael to edge a decision, move back into contention at £185, and I think Saturday might be the night that we say goodnight, and thank you to Kung Lee for a wonderful career.
It's been a difficult time for Michael the Count Bisping over the last few years. He hasn't won back-to-back fights in the UFC since 2011, would you believe? He's alternated wins and losses in his five bouts since then, losing to Chael Sonnen, Vitor Belfort, and most recently, Tim Kennedy in his last bout. Bisping, he's had to recover from some setbacks in the past. He's had a nasty eye injury that he's looking to recover from. I think we're pretty much there with that now. That's in his past. He seems to be 100% fit. But he didn't look himself against Tim Kennedy, where Kennedy really just took him down at will and held him down. Bisping wasn't really out-fought in any real sense, other than the fact that he was taken down and kept down. Kennedy offered very little offense, but did enough to win a unanimous decision in that fight, which really wasn't one worth writing home about. Now he's facing an opponent in Macau who's absolutely tailor-made for him. Kung Lee likes to do nothing better than stand and strike, and Michael Bisping will eat that up all day. He'll stand, he'll stick, he'll move, and I think against an aging fighter who was a very dangerous fighter about 4 or 5 years ago, I'm not so sure Kung Lee is quite the same force that he was back then when he was in Strikeforce really doing some serious damage. He's gone into the movie business. He's doing an awful lot of work for the UFC in the region in Asia to try and push the sport. And really, he's done a really good ambassadorial job. And this is his first fight in the UFC for quite some time. Will he be fully octagon tuned? I'm not so sure about that. Michael Bisping certainly will be, and he'll be coming into this fight with one crucial factor in his favour: motivation. An angry Michael Bisping is an effective Michael Bisping. Hopefully now the cobwebs have been blown out of the system against Kennedy, and he can go in there against Kung Lee with a full gas tank, completely sharp and ready to go. If he goes in fully fit, I can't see Kung Lee living with him. I think Bisping will mix things up. He'll look to keep things on the outside. And then as Lee throws his strikes, he'll look to counter those with takedowns. And I think Lee won't have much for him once Bisping gets his hands on him. I'll see the fight probably going the distance unless Lee's gas tank lets him down midway through the fight. And I see Michael Bisping taking this one by decision. In our second round, we take a look at the welterweight contest on the Macau card as highly ranked contenders Tyron Woodley and Dong Hyun Kim go to war.
Simon, I'm fascinated to see what sort of version of Dong Hyun Kim we see in Macau this Saturday. The stun gun's really reinvented himself in the past 12 months. He's become a surprising attraction in the welterweight ranks. He had this reputation as a bit of a horrible, gritty operator at 170 pounds who would take you down to the ground, suffocate you with a style that earned him a ton of decision wins, but not a lot of fans. He was effective, but it was ugly, and at times it was pretty uninspiring stuff. There weren't a lot of edges of seats in danger when Kim was in town, let's put it that way. But the last year seen a bit of a change in attitude from the South Korean. I wonder if he saw what was happening with the other people with that one-dimensional style. And I'm thinking of the likes of John Fitch, Yushin Akami, who were criticised and ultimately fired from the UFC for their lack of entertainment value. I wonder if he saw that and he made a conscious decision to adapt, because he's developed a lot more confidence in his hands and his chin. He's knocked out Eric Silva with a brilliant, brilliant left hook back in October 2013. March this year, he destroyed our own John Hathaway with a vicious, vicious spinning elbow. So it begs the question, what we're going to see against Tyron Woodley? And remember, as you've said already, it's Tyron Woodley with a point to prove. This is a huge step up in class from John Hathaway. A win over Woodley gives him a five-fight win streak and puts him right into the mix for the welterweight title. I wonder, though, with that much at stake, I wonder if he just can't stop himself reverting back to that stun gun of old. Because swinging big haymakers against Woodley will leave you very vulnerable to the big man's counter strikes. I wonder if once he tastes Woodley's power, he goes back to plan A, starts looking for the takedowns. But there's no guarantee there either. Look at the stats. Woodley, 95% successful takedown defence. I don't think stun gun's got the force or the technique to dominate Woodley like he's done so many others. I think it will be intriguing, maybe a little bit cagey at times, but I think Tyron Woodley's too good. I think he gets himself back in business with a stoppage win.
They call him the Chosen One, and Tyron Woodley was looking very much like a guy destined for world championship status until, of course, he ran into Rory McDonald. He had an interesting road to get to that point. He defeated Josh Koscheck, a perennial top contender, in spectacular fashion by knockout. He then faced Carlos Condit and was faring very well against the former UFC interim welterweight champion, only for Condit to suffer a knee injury and have the fight cut short. Against Rory McDonald, we didn't see the best of him, and I think he's going to be coming into this fight with Dong Hyun Kim incredibly motivated to bounce back and prove that he really is a legitimate top five contender in the UFC welterweight division. As for Kim is a very dangerous fighter. He's a real powerhouse. He's big, he's strong. Woodley is big and strong as well, but he doesn't have the range that Kim has. So that range could prove very interesting in this fight if Kim uses his striking to keep the fight at range and then close the distance when it makes sense to him. We could see some problems for the Chosen One, Tyron Woodley. But the big X factor in this fight for Woodley is his power. Someone like Josh Koscheck absolutely outstanding wrestler and packs a decent punch himself, had no answer for Tyron Woodley's power. And Dong Hyun Kim, we've seen him on the wrong end of a savage knockout at the hands of Eric Silver. Now, I could see Tyron Woodley delivering just as much, if not more, power in his strikes than Eric Silver did. So it's going to come down to, has Woodley got the gas tank and the footwork to keep Kim honest for the first couple of rounds, and then maybe look to land one of those heavy bombs against the tiring South Korean late on? If he does, he can win this fight, but I think it's a very, very close one. If I was a betting man, I'd probably side with Dong Hyun Kim. I suspect he'll be the underdog going into this fight, but I do think his overall strength and smothering game could prove quite effective against a slightly smaller man in Tyron Woodley. But if Woodley can keep mobile, keep out of the way, not move in straight lines, lots of lateral movement, and look to counter-strike Kim as he looks to charge in, then we could well see a TKO victory for Tyron Woodley. In round three, we look ahead to the weekend's main event stateside, as former UFC lightweight champion of the world, Benson Henderson, takes on dangerous Brazilian contender, Rafael Dos Anjos.
Strange times these for Benson Henderson, Simon. The former lightweight champ had one of the most controversial title reigns we've seen in recent times. Two razor-thin decision wins over Frankie Edgar, the highly controversial win over Gil Melendez. You can make a very strong case he lost all three of those fights, and it comes down to his fighting style. He's a very cerebral fighter, a bit of a pickpocket, very, very low risk. He's fleet of foot, so he gets himself in and out of harm's way, taking minimal damage. He's never ever going to be that guy that stands there with his chin sticking out and trading bombs. Where Henderson excels is keeping you off balance, dictating the pace and distance, and accumulating points with deft rather than that deadly striking. Now, it works at times, but I think he's going to have to do more against Dos Anjos. Now, last time out, finally, we saw a bit of a ruthless edge to his work. He submitted an overmatched Rustam Habilov. It was nothing more than a keep busy fight, but he did what he had to do. Dos Anjos is a different proposition. He's mixed with good quality operators, as you've mentioned. Anyone who's got a win over Donald Cerrone has to be respected. Having said that, I do think Henderson's got enough in his locker to beat him. The question is whether another decision win would do him any favours. I think if he's serious about getting back into that title conversation, he's going to have to get a back-to-back stoppage win. He's going to have to do something remarkable in a division stacked with talent. I've got a feeling that Joe Silva's going to make Benson Henderson sweat before he gets another glimpse of that gold. I think he'll beat Dos Anjos. I wouldn't be surprised if he got matched in early 2015 with a guy that nobody seems interested in fighting, Khabib Nurmagomedov. But I do think Benson's going to force himself back into conversation. He's going to have to do it the hard way. That starts this Saturday. I'm putting my faith in him. I can't believe I'm saying it. Benson Henderson, two stoppages on the trot. I think he beats Dos Anjos and he beats him early.
In the shark tank that is the UFC's 155-pound lightweight division, there probably isn't a more underrated fighter in that top group than Rafael Dos Anjos. The Brazilian has been in excellent form in the UFC for the last 2 years and has lost just one out of his last seven fights against Khabib Nurmagomedov. And he looks in very good shape. He's had some superb wins against the likes of Anthony Njikuani, Mark Bocek, Evan Dunham, and even Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is on a real streak of his own now. But he beat Cerrone by unanimous decision a year ago, last summer, in fact, in August 28. So he's got some decent names on his record there, but perhaps he hasn't had a victory over an absolute top level contender. Cerrone is definitely the biggest name on his recent record. Benson Henderson, of course, is going to give him the opportunity to take on a former UFC champion. Beat him, he is right in there with a shout of a title shot at 155 pounds. Can he do it, of course, is the big question. To be honest with you, I'm not so sure he can. I think Henderson is almost entirely the wrong style of opponent for him. I think against a striker, Dos Anjos could probably manoeuvre his way to a decision victory, as he has done in the past. But against someone who can mix things up and really use his power and his wrestling, I think we'll see Henderson dominate this fight rather than the Brazilian Rafael Dos Anjos. You look at the way he lost to Nurmagomedov. Really, he was ragdolled for a lot of that fight by the Russian, who I know a lot of people, including myself, are really looking forward to seeing him get back in the mix when he comes back from injury. There is a genuine title threat. Benson Henderson is a persistent title threat. He held the belt for quite some time, lost it to his arch nemesis, Anthony Showtime Pettis, and he wants to get back in there with his old sparring partner, so to speak, and give him a real run for his money for a third time and get that belt back. Will he defeat Rafael Dos Anjos? I fully expect him to do so. I think Henderson will be exceptionally motivated for this fight. He's headlining a fight night card. Henderson is a pay-per-view draw. He's a pay-per-view fighter, but he's on a fight night card. He wants to elevate himself right back up there into the big leagues. To do that, he needs to win. He needs to win impressively. Dos Anjos is very, very dangerous. He has excellent jiu-jitsu, and he's a very sound striker as well. But he's relatively straightforward. He doesn't throw too much that's out of the ordinary. Henderson has got a little bit more about him. His taekwondo background could come into play here. But I think the thing that will win the fight for Henderson will be his wrestling. When he gets up close, he's a big, strong lightweight. If he gets hold of Rafael Dos Anjos, I think he can bully him through the 5-round main event in Tulsa and take the victory. So my pick for Benson Henderson versus Rafael Dos Anjos is Benson Henderson by unanimous decision. In round four, we take a look at a crossroads fight in the UFC's middleweight division as Francis Carmon takes on Brazilian jiu-jitsu ace Talis Latis.
Boy, oh boy, the wheels have come off lately for Francis Carmon, haven't they, Simon? If he doesn't get a result against Talis Latis, I think the Frenchman may find himself out of a job come Monday morning. His last showing in the octagon was lacklustre, to say the least. For a man who once had aspirations of title glory, a loss to CB Dolloway was a disaster. It was his second defeat on the spin. History tells us that a third consecutive loss in the UFC normally means you're packing your suitcase and you're looking for work elsewhere. The problem with Carmon is he doesn't say much, and he doesn't do enough in the octagon to stand out from the crowd. He's missing that deadly weapon that can differentiate himself from the other people in that busy, busy weight class. He reminds me a touch of Dong Hyun Kim, who we spoke about earlier. They've both got that strength-sapping grappling style that can be very uncomfortable viewing for the casual fan. Where are stun guns involved and added to his armoury? Carmont's gone backwards. His last five fights have gone to the judges, and not many people are rushing to their DVRs to watch him all over again. It's one thing to be boring and win fights, but if you're not entertaining and you're not winning, then you're walking a tightrope. The fight game is cruel and unforgiving at times. You can work hard for years to get to the world's best fight league, but once you get there, make no mistake, there's a target on your back. There's an ever-growing list of young, hungry guys all scrapping for your spot on the payroll. That's the pressure these athletes are living with every time they step into the octagon. That's why Francis Carmont needs to give the performance of his life on Saturday, I'm telling you. I hope the pressure doesn't make him retreat back into his shell and go too defensive, because I think Talis Latis is very beatable. I know you're going to touch on his submission pedigree, and if Carmont just gets in there and lies in a Brazilian's guard, I agree that would be suicide. I do believe he's got a little bit more to offer, though. I think he's got the tools to stay relevant in around the top 10, maybe top 15 of this division, but it's going to require a change in mindset. If he can use his wrestling skills and then show more ambition when he's in a dominant position, and by that I mean being a bit more active, throw some fast flurries of elbows and punches, give us a bit more kind of kinetic frenzy, then he can do damage, he can get himself back in the win column. My prediction, I think Francis Carmont saves his UFC career, but just for the moment, with a slight decision win.
I said it earlier in the introduction, and the fight we have here between Talis Latis and Francis Carmont really is a proper crossroads fight. You've got Talis Latis, who was once a UFC title challenger at the middleweight division, took on Anderson Silva back at UFC 97, way back in 2009, disappeared from the UFC later that year after losing to Alessio Sakara, and has since come back, making a bit of a comeback in the UFC. He came back in 2013 against Tom Kong Watson in Rio, defeated him by unanimous decision. He's since beaten Ed Herman by unanimous decision. And then more impressively, he took on Trevor Hot Sauce Smith and TKO'd him inside a round at UFC Fight Night Nogueira v. Nelson in Abu Dhabi. Now he takes on Carmont in a fight that really Carmont has no option but to win. But the thing here is, Talis Latis is a man in form. 6 wins on the trot, 3 of them by decision, 2 of them by submission, and that TKO of Trevor Smith. He's getting the job done. But I think it's a real test, this one, for Talis Latis. Is he at a level that he can then jump back into world championship contention? I'm not convinced he can. I think he's one of these mid-range fighters, mid-level fighters. He's very, very good at what he does. He's got a smothering jiu-jitsu style that's incredibly effective. But he's going to be fighting a big, strong guy in Francis Carmont. And Carmont knows his back's against the wall in this fight. He has to win. Now, he shows signs of being a really, really classy operator in this UFC middleweight division, Carmont. But we haven't seen the aggression and the power that we know he possesses over a consistent round even. We see it in little patches here and there. If he can put it together and can put it together across 3 rounds, then we've got a dangerous fighter on our hands in the UFC middleweight division. Carmont should win this fight. It's all going to be down to whether he can prevent Talis Latis from taking him to the mat. If he does, he wins his fight by decision. If he gets taken down, he's going to get eaten alive by Talis Latis' jiu-jitsu. Which side am I going to fall on? I think I'm going to go with Carmont. I think he's got the natural ability. He will have learnt a lot of the lessons from his last 2 defeats against Ronaldo Jacare Souza. No shame in losing to him. And CB Dolloway in a fight that many expected him to win. That was the one. If he learns his lessons from that fight, then I think we could see a new, improved and very dangerous looking Francis Carmont. He needs to win this fight, and if he does it well, we could see him propel back into some meaningful fights in the UFC middleweight division. We've broken down 4 of the bigger bouts taking place this weekend, but in round 5 we pondered a question: who's currently the biggest star in the UFC today? Ralph, over to you.
There's no doubt in my mind that right now the biggest star on the UFC roster has to be Rowdy Ronda Rousey. Now, before you say it, I know you're going to come at me with a case for Jon Jones. I'm not having any of it. Ronda Rousey is a megastar. When she fights, the mainstream press comes flocking. TV shows, magazines, radio, they all want a piece of the woman who single-handedly transformed women's mixed martial arts. Dana White for years refused to even consider a women's division in the UFC. As far as he was concerned, they could hold up the ring cards and that was it. He admitted that it was Rousey who changed his mind, and no doubt he's very glad she did, because she's made him a sack full of money. She's the Mike Tyson of mixed martial arts at the moment. People are paying in the US, they're paying $55 on pay-per-view to watch her fight, and they don't even care if the contest only lasts a few seconds. She's a phenomenon, like Tyson, smashing her way through opponent after opponent, and the fans can't get enough of it. We're seeing history in the making here. It reminds me of when Royce Gracie was the skinny Brazilian guy, choking out guys twice his size in the early days of the UFC. That was the Gracie era in the men's game. This will certainly go down in the history books as the Ronda Rousey era. What's more, people know we need to enjoy her career while we can. She's been seduced by the stardom of Hollywood. She's got 2 more big movie roles lined up, and I've got a feeling the next fight could be her last. Being a movie star is a lot less taxing on the body than fighting for a living, and it's usually a lot more lucrative. So when you talk about being a star, I think you're talking about someone who commands headlines and column inches outside of the mixed martial arts media, who makes that crossover into the mainstream conversation. Ronda Rousey's done that. She's carried the entire women's division and, quite frankly, women's mixed martial arts in general on her own shoulders. She's the most legit star on the roster. When she goes, we'll all miss her.
I think this is a fantastic question. Who is the biggest star in the UFC today? Now, common sense would dictate it's one of 2 people, Jon Jones or Ronda Rousey. Jon Jones is top of the pound for pound list at the moment. and is a real top level fighter. He's probably the most skilled mixed martial artist we've seen in the UFC, possibly of all time. He's up there with Anderson Silva for me, and in terms of pure fighting ability and getting the job done inside the octagon, there aren't many you can touch John Jones. But to be the biggest star in a promotion, I think you've got to be a little bit more than that. And outside of the octagon, John Jones has done one or two things, said one or two things, and conducted himself once or twice, especially on social media, in ways that perhaps don't elevate him to that level of superstardom that perhaps a guy of his skill and ability could have achieved so far in his career. So I don't think he quite gets it as the biggest star. I don't think he quite makes that accolade at the moment. In fighter terms, I don't think there's an argument. Ronda Rousey, she's ranked number 9 in the pound-for-pound rankings at the moment. I think that's too low. I think in fighting terms, I think she's absolutely dominant in her weight division. I don't think she's come close to being beaten. And in that regard, she holds her grip on her weight division unlike any other fighter, even John Jones. I think Rousey is, in fighting terms, the biggest star. For me, however, the biggest star in the UFC is Dana White. Who's the guy who everyone gravitates to? It's Dana White. Who's the guy who's active on social media, engaging with fans, arguing with fans, giving free tickets to fans? It's Dana White. And no matter what happens in any of the fight events, the man who you can guarantee will deliver in one way or another is Dana White. He's great copy if you're a journalist. He will always give you something of interest to say. He's a rarity in the sports world in that he's a leading sports executive who doesn't hide behind PR. He tells you what he thinks, and that might rub people up the wrong way every now and again, but personally, I think it's great. I think it's refreshing. It's not always possibly the most well-advised thing to be doing sometimes, but from my standpoint, I think it's fantastic from my view as a journalist and also from a fan. I like to see passion in the product. You like to know that the guy at the helm believes in what he's doing, and believes in the fighters, and he defends them to the hilt when necessary, and he's not shy to say that fights suck when fights suck. After every fight, he's up there doing his press conference. His video blogs are absolute must-watch viewing on YouTube, and he's got millions of followers on Twitter. I think, rolling everything up and taking a look at things from all angles, the biggest star in the UFC is the man at the helm. That's Dana White. That's my assessment. Fighter-wise, Ronda Rousey, no questions asked. However, over and above that, the guy who runs the show, one of the biggest shows in sport, is also one of the biggest stars and probably the biggest character. Biggest star in sport, Dana White. That's all we've got time for on the championship rounds on show number 3. Don't forget you can watch UFC Fight Night 48, Michael Bisping versus Kung Lee from Macau live on UFC Fight Pass, and then you can watch the full main card on tape delay at 10 p.m. on BT Sport 1 on Saturday, August 23rd. That's followed by UFC Fight Night Tulsa, Benson Henderson versus Rafael Dos Anjos. That comes to you live on BT Sport 1 at 1 a.m. Saturday night, August 23rd. Follow me on Twitter at Simon Head, and follow Ralph at Ralph Welch MMA. You can also follow the show itself at Champ Rounds Pod. Hope you enjoyed the show, enjoy the fights, and we'll be back very, very soon.